Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go. You make everything all right. When I feel like I'm lost, something tells me you're here with me. And I can always find my way when you are here.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Love Never Ends, a book by Connie Morton and Barry Dundas, and that can be found at www.loveneverendsbook.com. Tonight's guests are Dr. Carlos Alvarado and Dr. Nancy Zingroni, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guests, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Francis. And last night, I was trying to think of what I wanted to talk about a little bit today. And we did watch a really interesting documentary. As a matter of fact, we showed it last night at our afterlife discussion group.
In Cold Spring Harbor.
In New York, and Fran and I moderate that group, and as our listeners may know, we host these afterlife discussion groups in various parts of the United States, and they're small groups, and we talk about all different things and phenomena and share experiences, and people...
You can watch movies.
Yeah, people can... they're free, and people can sign up. What's the website, or what's the email? Is it ADG?
ADG, like an afterlife discussion group,
right.
ADG at foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and you'll be corresponding with Donna, who's the director of the afterlife discussion groups, and you can get information to sign up directly from her, or if you're interested in running one in your neighborhood or your area, Donna is very good at helping you out in getting started.
Hmm. And as I mentioned, so we watched this documentary, and we're very grateful to our members that, you know, bring certain things to our attention. And one of our nice members sent us a link to this documentary that's not quite finished yet, but interesting nonetheless. And it's all about electronic voice phenomena and instrumental transcommunication. And now we've seen it twice. It's about an hour in length, and we'll put a link. Did you already put it up on the on our
no,
website?
No, I will put a link up on the website tonight.
Yeah. I don't remember it per se, but we will get that information out. And
I'll put it on the radio page, so anybody who's listening just knows to go to the Signs of Life radio page, and I'll have the link up there.
Yeah, and there were some things we took out of it. It's basically a history of the phenomena. You know, how people record it. Some things that we took from it, it talked about phone calls from the dead, you know, and I know there were books have been written about it, and it's more common than people think, you know, that people do get phone calls and hear voices, and they identify the voices as their loved ones. But as this pointed out, there are many EVP researchers in history, and evidently what they do is they take an interest in what the present researchers are doing, and they've called them, and there are some extraordinary phone recordings, you know, from these researchers on the other side, which raises an interesting point. Do you think that people gather with like minds and like expertise areas when they cross over, and they continue work and research, you know, on the other side?
That's a very broad statement that you made there. I don't know that they do that much, but I think that people who had a vested interest in some work that they did here and left knowing that the work was unfinished have a vested interest in whoever succeeds them in taking over that work and helping them to get it done.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, we think in terms of professions. So on the other side, I don't know if you retain your same personalities and memories, I mean, you retain your expertise in your profession. There's a great body of evidence from psychical researchers from 150 years ago that when they pass, they are immediately in contact with other fellow psychical researchers. So that's what started me thinking about that. If psychical researchers are helping each other, and EVP researchers, and who knows, maybe there are people in the medical profession that are working on various cures and things of that nature. I don't know how they can communicate by putting thoughts in somebody's head, probably easier than making a phone call or doing EVP recordings, but nonetheless, it probably takes place. I know you mentioned you were surprised during the film that there was a recording of somebody that was deceased, and in her voice, she said she expressed surprise that the voices were heard. She said something which the people in the physical heard, but she was surprised when she heard what people in the physical
right. I believe it was more than one person on the other side that was attempting this communication for the first time with people in the physical world. And they thought, kind of like we think, when we talk to our loved ones that are deceased out loud, we say, oh, it's a one-way conversation because 99% of us don't hear back. We don't think we're hearing back. And they apparently, it's the same thing from the other side, because when they did get the electronic voice phenomenon and they were able to hear what they said, they immediately responded. And then her response from the other side was how surprised she was that, wow, we get to hear what you said in our space. They totally didn't expect that to happen.
Right. What also was interesting was that when some of these deceased EVP researchers made contact with some of the present-day, living researchers, one of them said, I have somebody else here who wants to talk to you, and then said, let me pass the device. And then you heard this rattling sound, and then the voice of this other, researcher, appeared. Now, that was interesting. So, we think everything takes place via thought processes. You're this entity of consciousness and thought. And yet here, they're passing a device. So they're manifesting a physical object, what we would call a physical object, on the other side.
Why not?
What do you take of that?
That's exactly what I thought that they were doing, because we know that we are beings of thought. And here in the physical world, everything is physical around us, so we take that for granted. But in the non-physical world, your thought creates any physical things that you think that you need. So they were convinced that they needed something, or maybe they really did need something, to communicate back with us. So they created it, and they shared it. They passed it from one person to the next to make sure that both of them had the opportunity to speak.
Yeah, I think it's clear that, some people get EVP on a regular basis quite easily. And in a sense, when you're recording EVP, you're acting as a medium. Now, also in this film, somebody that was featured was an Italian fellow named Bacci. I think it's Enrico Bacci or Marcello Bacci, I forgot. But he's been for several decades now, he's been using one of these antique vacuum tube radios to communicate with the other side. And in all these years, he's never charged anybody, and he invites people that are bereaved to come to his facility, and they record all sorts of voices. But what's interesting is that he's been studied by a lot of scientists, and what scientists have done with him, I think it was him in particular, they removed, during their experiments, they removed the vacuum tubes from the radio, and yet they still got the sounds. So to me, that says the apparatus doesn't really mean much. It's the person, some sort of a match with the person who's acting as a medium. So that was pretty interesting as well.
What creates the thought process of being able to receive.
Right.
You know, people speak very often of having psychic-type experiences when they're distracted, when they're driving, when they are reading something, when they're distracted from the physical world and their mind is left to wander into some other space or non-space. And then they have those experiences of someone being in the room with them, of hearing someone. So for us here, it seems almost like it's a non-thought process. If you can remove the everyday thoughts of the physical world from your mind, you're opened up to receive information.
Right, and I'm sure Tom and Lisa Butler of A Transfield will be telling us a lot more about that when we have them back on the show, and they'll be at our conference in San Diego demonstrating this. So we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll be back with Doctors Alvarado and Zangrone. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Paul Alexander, singer, songwriter, and licensed psychotherapist, created GriefSong.com after working in hospice providing care to bereaved families. The music of GriefSong.com offers music to support, nurture, and acknowledge the landscape of grief. Many have used Paul Alexander's music for inspiration, memorial services, and comfort. Visit GriefSong.com to hear some of the music available. The sounds of hope and healing.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guests tonight are Dr. Carlos Alvarado and Dr. Nancy Singrone. Our sponsor is Love Never Ends, a book by Connie Morton and Barry Dundas, and that could be found at www.loveneverendsbook.com. Bob?
And Dr. Carlos Alvarado and Dr. Nancy Zingroni have enjoyed long careers in parapsychology. They've been affiliated with some of the premier institutions in the field. In addition to conducting research, they've taught parapsychology at universities, colleges, and adult education venues. Carlos has a doctorate in psychology from the University of Edinburgh. He's a true scholar in the field. He's on the board of the Rhine Research Center, and a great deal of his work has been focused on out-of-body experiences and other psychic experiences. He's also a world authority in the history of parapsychology. Dr. Nancy Zingroni's doctorate is also in psychology from the University of Edinburgh. She is also on the board of the Rhine Research Center. She's a past president of the Parapsychological Association, and her work has a broad range. It includes research on adult memories of childhood, imaginary companions, psychic and dream experiences, and psychological characteristics of psychic experiences, and I should say psychic experiencers. They both authored scholarly articles published in numerous peer-reviewed journals. They've lectured and taught around the world. A website that they have built, which is a work in progress, is the Azire, AZIRE.org. And welcome, Drs. Alvarado and Zingroni.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
Yeah. You know, I guess a good place to start is, you know, we mentioned, of course, parapsychology. I'm not sure that all of our listeners truly understand the term. I mentioned that your doctorates were in psychology. I don't know at the time whether there even were doctorates in parapsychology. But maybe one of you can start with a definition of what parapsychology is.
Yes, well, parapsychology is the scientific study of what we generally call psychic phenomena. These are things such as ESP, or extrasensory perception. You know, we talk about telepathy, precognition, telepathy when you get ideas or the feelings or emotions of someone at a distance, precognition when you get information about the future. These are phenomena that seem to extend our senses, our way of interacting with the world, beyond what you find in the accepted knowledge of psychology and other disciplines.
Mm.
There are also many other things that we study, you know, such as healing, out-of-body experiences, and people that see apparitions or ghosts. The field is really wide.
Yeah, and some things that fall under the parapsychology, the research takes place in a lab. You could study intention, a presentiment, and healing, as you mentioned, or telepathy. And then there's also things that are studied outside the lab, like reincarnation or ghosts and apparitions. But I guess you would consider both to be equally important. I mean, do some people in your field tend to discount it if it doesn't take place in a lab?
Sure, there's a difference in the field between experimental research and field investigation, and there are those who prefer to work in the laboratory and feel that those kinds of results are more reliable and valid and tell us more about the underlying mechanisms that may allow psychic phenomena to happen. But then there's other folks like Carlos and I who are very much find spontaneous cases and field investigations and things that happen in people's lives to be very important as well. That's the phenomena that got us all interested in doing this particular science. It's where we get our inspiration and where we get a lot of our information about how an experiencer is affected by the things that they see and hear and can do.
You know, I know that you're both on the board at Rhine Research Center, and I mean, would J.B. Rhine say that would he call himself a parapsychologist, or was
yes.
that? Yeah, he
yes.
okay.
So an experimental parapsychologist.
Right. And
yeah, his approach was mainly experimental. You know, he would bring people into the laboratory, and he believed that was the main and more important way of studying psychic experiences.
Mm. That and I Ryan's website is ryan.org, and Dr. Alvarado, you're going to be speaking there soon about mediumship. Was that about the history of mediumship, or, you know, in what capacity?
Yeah, it's mainly historical. We have a kind of a double program where there will be two speakers, and one of them, and also Dr. Phil Morse, which is also associated with the Ryan Center, is going to also to participate. What we're doing is talking about two mediums from the old days of psychical research. Dr. Morse will be covering medium Leonora Piper, who was a mental medium that produced, you know, communications from people that had died. And I will cover the case of a physical medium, Eusapia Palladino, which was an Italian lady around whom physical phenomena happened, such as table levitations and other phenomena. What we're trying to do is to bring a lot of this forgotten, neglected, old material to the attention of people and, you know, first argue that it's important to know what has been done in the past of this discipline, but also argue that those old materials are still relevant today and that they still help us to question, you know, bring to mind the questions about what is mediumship, how does it relate to the issue of survival of death.
Mm. Yeah, and you mentioned Leonora Piper, and I've read extensively about some of these tremendous mediums of yesteryear, and Duncan, and you mentioned Palladino, and then you read about the scientists and researchers and academics who studied these mediums with countless, you know, sittings, and the evidence was so extraordinary, and yet, you know, to most of the people, it's like it never happened. They never heard of them. They're not familiar with it. And you still have scientists today that are researching, you know, mediumship to try to show that certain people can receive communication. So, I mean, I wonder about the future of that type of research. Maybe we need to go in another direction. We don't seem to be getting any place other than substantiating that some people can do it. Yeah, you have any thoughts on that? Or?
Yes, certainly we'll agree that, first of all, there is not a lot of research in parapsychology in general, and even less when it comes to mediumship in particular.
Yeah.
I think we need to conduct more studies, and not only studies that show that the thing happened, that it's real, but also studies that will tell us something about how mediumship works. You know, some people have recently emphasized the study of the types of impressions, the imagery, the way the information comes to the medium. So they go beyond the aspect of seeing if the communications are real or not, but they're trying to see, well, how does it work? And scientifically, of course, that's very difficult to do, and the work proceeds really slowly. But there is a lot more to be done there. And I agree with what you said before. A lot of people just don't know of the old work or even of more recent work. It's an area that is kind of very much neglected.
Yeah. I know that, well, I'm curious, Dr. Zangroni, how did you first develop this interest? What piqued your interest in psi phenomena? Was it a personal experience, or you were just searching for answers that they couldn't explain?
It wasn't my personal experience so much as the personal experience of some friends of mine. I was 13 when I got interested in parapsychology. Some years ago, I've forgotten who it was, did a study of parapsychologists about what age they were at when they got interested in the field, and the distribution had two peaks. One was early teen years, and one was in your late 40s, early 50s. And I was one of the former. So I was really lucky because I come from a small town in Illinois, north of Chicago, and our librarian must have had a very deep interest in parapsychology because she stocked all of Dr. Ryan's books and Dr. Louisa Ryan's books, and just there was a lot of reading that was available for me to do, and that's what I did. I read about the experience that my friend was having and tried to help her with her experience and that kind of thing, and just got really interested in the field. And I was inspired by Louisa Ryan because Louisa Ryan had a happy marriage and children and also a very active academic career, and I thought, well, this is kind of wonderful. I could do this. So it was an early inspiration.
So and Dr. Alvarado, I mean, how about you? Was it a common interest, or was it any personal experience?
Yeah, I cannot say that it was from any personal interest. I just, you know, when I was younger, I would guess 15, 16, around that time, you know, I had a lot of curiosity about the world, about the basic questions of life, religion. I think, you know, a lot of young people go through that. And I think I was lucky enough that during my readings and my search, I found literature about psychic phenomena. And that seemed to be, to me, more satisfying than the more philosophical approaches. So I just started reading and trying to get involved and, you know, preparing myself for a career in the field. And one thing led to another. You know, I started meeting people in the field, going to conventions, and I met Nancy years later, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, and happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you.
I know it's wonderful that to share the common interest. I'm sure that that's added some spice to your marriage over these many years.
Yes, it has.
I've read quite a bit about from researchers that claim that people that enter altered states of consciousness, such as hypnosis, are able to have increased psi phenomena abilities. And I'm reading a book now that was published in 1851 by Jay Tiffany, a series of lectures. And about other things he talks about in 1851 was mesmerism and how it was not a question in his mind, because he was experimenting with it, that people develop psychic abilities when they were in this, I guess mesmerism is the same as hypnotism, I assume. I don't really know. But what does the research show? I mean, is this something where we should be focusing future research? Is it true that people in these states are able to have increased abilities?
Well, I think that there is evidence of that happening. You know, the mesmeric literature, the name coming from Franz Anton Mesmer, that he started working in this field in the late 18th century. Basically, he believed that he could induce trances and healings and other phenomena by the use of what he called animal magnetism, you know, a force that was universal that he could channel through magnets, through the use of the hands, through touching people. With time in psychology, the phenomena that he produced were reinterpreted, and then it became hypnosis. A lot of people stopped believing in the magnetic force, and they claim that everything could be explained via suggestion, you know, the role of the impact of the idea on the mind of people. But regardless of that, you know, the point is that during these very early observations, a lot of the people that were in these induced trances seemed to show what we today will call ESP phenomena. You know, they will guess the thoughts of the hypnotizer. Sometimes they were asked to go to distant places, similar to the remote viewing of recent times. They will go to faraway places and describe, you know, what was happening there. And later on, they were able to find out that a lot of those descriptions, you know, were accurate. With modern parapsychology, there has been a lot of studies trying to investigate if hypnosis really increases ESP in the laboratory. And there is some evidence that that's the case. But it's, again, an area that has been neglected in recent times. And I will say that, as you were saying, yes, it's an area that needs to be followed more. Because, you know, hypnosis is by itself a very rich, very complicated field. And hypnosis involves all kinds of variables, all kinds of issues. you know, from the personality of the person that has been hypnotized, their expectations, to the way the hypnotic inductions are presented. And I think there is a lot more to be done to really understand better why hypnosis has that effect. But at this point, I will say that I think there is enough evidence to say yes. You know, from the old mesmeric period to the more recent experiments, there is evidence that ESP can happen in the hypnotic state. Mm.
So all we need is a whole bunch of funding, so you can do that project, right?
That's the perennial yes, problem with the field, true. Finding the funding.
Yeah, I know. I know, Dr. Zangroni, I mentioned that you work, some of your work has involved the psychological characteristics of psychic experiencers. So is there a correlation between somebody's psychological characteristics and their ability to their telepathic ability or their ability to receive these non-local communications? Are there certain personality types?
Yes, there seem to be definitely. There's been a lot of survey research, which means that we ask people if they've had psychic experiences, and if so, what type. And then we'll also administer, in the survey context, a questionnaire about dissociation, for instance, which is the ability to kind of separate yourself from what's going on around you, or absorption, which is kind of the opposite, where you're getting really, really involved in something and the whole surroundings kind of go away, like getting very, very involved in a movie and forgetting about the passage of time. We have looked at things like boundary thinness, and that's a psychological concept that speaks to how easy it is for you to get unconscious material into your conscious waking life. So are you remembering your dreams? Are you getting intuitions? Are you also more sensitive to the people around you, more empathetic, more sympathetic? So in over a number of years, last couple of decades, between the survey research and some studies of people who have been successful in ESP laboratories, we see this pattern of people who are more artistic, more dissociative, more able to become absorbed in something, more open to new experience, more sensitive to the people around them. They may have grown up in a household that felt that psychic functioning was perfectly normal. They may be more susceptible to hypnosis, it's easier to hypnotize them. And so there's this whole kind of creative and sympathetic, sort of tuned into the environment kind of a personality type that seems to go with having psychic experiences and also with doing well in the laboratory. It's a little bit different for psychokinesis than it is for extrasensory perception, and not a lot of studies have been done, say, of people who see apparitions or are involved in poltergeist cases or are psychic healers. So that kind of research certainly needs to be done. There needs to be more of that type of research. But on the ESP side, there's certainly this kind of a picture that's emerging of a very creative person who's very sensitive to the environment and has a lot of these experiences, like losing track of time and remembering your dreams, having vivid and lucid dreams, and being more intuitive and that kind of thing.
Mm, very interesting. We're talking with Dr. Carlos Alvarado and Dr. Nancy Zangroni. We are talking about all sorts of psychic phenomena and research. Their website is the Azire, AZIRE.org. You could also find out more about them on Rhine.org, and that's RHINE.org. We're going to go to a short break, and we come back. We're going to continue our conversation, so stay with us.
Paul Alexander, singer, songwriter, and licensed psychotherapist, created GriefSong.com after working in hospice providing care to bereaved families. The music of GriefSong.com offers music to support, nurture, and acknowledge the landscape of grief. Many have used Paul Alexander's music for inspiration, memorial services, and comfort. Visit GriefSong.com to hear some of the music available. The sounds of hope and healing.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.winbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com. That's K-A-M-L-A-K.com for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight are Dr. Carlos Alvarado and Dr. Nancy Zingaroni. This show is sponsored by Love Never Ends, a book by Connie Martin and Barry Dundas, and that can be found at www.loveneverendsbook.com. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. First of all, we want to let you know that you can let us know that you like Signs of Life Radio by going to the Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and like us. Or you can use the donate button on any of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space to add a comment on what you love and what you don't like so much about the show. And three, when you shop, you can remember Forever Family Foundation. You can support the work of our 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all when you shop. first, you will need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for, and there are more than 1,300 online stores like Cheap Tickets, TurboTax, Victoria's Secret, Zales, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Grief Transformation Weekend is July 26th through 28th at the Guest House in Chester, Connecticut. The first 50 reservations will fill this intimate retreat escape with like-minded people seeking to maintain their relationships with those who have crossed to the other side. Announcements have been sent into your email boxes that tell you all about this exciting weekend with Garrett Jackson, Paul Alexander, Dr. Betty Kovach, Doreen Malloy, Rebecca Ann LoCicero, Laura Lynn Jackson, and our Healing Reiki team of volunteers, Donna Mello and Robin Murray. Early bird pricing ends tomorrow, so hurry up. Our 7th annual Afterlife Conference will be held this year in beautiful and warm San Diego, California at the DoubleTree by Hilton Golf Resort, November 9th and 10th. Mark the dates, as this will be the best one ever. The big member-only discounts end on July 31st, so make your plans now for the Friday night banquet featuring Kim Russo, star of the TV hit series The Haunting of. She will be the keynote presenter, bringing through communication from the other side. And then the conference begins early Saturday morning through Sunday evening, including featured presentations by Tom and Lisa Butler of the Association Transcommunication, Dr. Jeffrey Tarrant, researching the brain changes in mediums during communication, research medium Janet Mayer, Dr. Stephen E. Browdy, Dr. Evan Alexander, and Lloyd Auerbach, with spirit communication demonstrations from certified mediums Laura Lynn Jackson and Angelina Diana. And our Holidays Past raffle is in full swing. You might want to get in while the number of assignments are low. The mediums in this raffle are Dave Campbell, Eliza Ray, Nancy Marlowe, Tracy Lee Nash, and Catherine Nadel. It's $5 a chance. And now back to you, Bob.
And a big thank you to Dr. Alvarado and Dr. Zangroni for staying with us with all those announcements. You know what I wanted to ask you about is a great many people talk to us about dream visits that they have from deceased loved ones. They describe being able to tell the difference between what they call like a normal dream and a visit from the deceased. You know, that they describe these visits as giving them great comfort and hope. They have long-lasting effects. Is this something that you come across in your work, and maybe that's one of the goals of parapsychology, to identify the effects that some of these experiences can have on those who have them.
Yes, I certainly will say so. The effects of these experiences are very important, and I think are a way of showing that these phenomena are around us and are important for our behavior, our beliefs, and the like. When you refer to the dreams of mediums or dreams about, you know, contact with the dead, that's one of those areas that we really have not done research in the area, but we have been interested. Recently, I wrote a paper that I published in England, very short paper about the need to study the role of dreams in mediumship. Certainly you find a lot of information about that in the old literature about mediumship from the 19th century, and even recent accounts of mediums themselves, how sometimes from the beginning of their mediumship, you know, they receive messages that guided them, that gave them information from dreams coming from diseased people. But I don't know of any, you know, systematic studies that have been done on the area. Again, it's not surprising because mediumship is so neglected inside parapsychology and as a research topic in general. But I believe it's a very important field because, you know, we have learned many, many things about the psychology of dreams independent of mediumship. And I think it's time now to try to see if there is a relationship between those studies from psychology and those related to mediumship and contact with the dead. There is certainly a lot of lines of research to be done.
I believe you gave a presentation at the Rhine Research Center about auras and luminous phenomena.
Yes.
I mean, do we all have these fields around us that can be read by if you're perceptive enough?
Well, people that see auras all the time say that is the case. You know, that everyone has a field around them and that it can be perceived if you have the right ability to do so. We have done some research on the topic and we found out that there is certainly a lot of people out there that see auras. And one of the interesting things is that, you know, auras present themselves in very different shapes. Some people see something like an outline, you know, around the head of someone. Other people see flashes of light. Other people see a strange glowing that they cannot define precisely. There are cases where people see beams or rays of light emanating from the body or from the head of particular individuals. Someone was looking at me and they saw a rainbow coming out of my head. So, you know, there are many shapes that are described in the literature. Healers are also involved, you know, in some of them in seeing auras. And they, of course, say that part of their healing work is the manipulation of those aura fields. We have we don't get into the area of the physics of that radiation, if it's a real physical field or what. That's really not our specialty. But certainly the way things are described, the way that they appear, seems to be that there is that field of some type of energy that is perceived as luminous exists around us. And what we have tried to do is to study more what type of reports people give us and also what is the psychology of people that see mediumship. You know, what other characteristics people have, what other experiences they have. One of the things we found out is that the people that see auras are most of the time they also have many other psychic experiences. They also see apparitions, they have ESP dreams, they have out-of-body experiences, and the like. So we are slowly accumulating more knowledge, but again, it's one of those areas like mediumship and like many other things we have been talking tonight that we really need to accumulate more knowledge. But it's certainly a real phenomenon and a very important one, I think.
Yeah, and well, both of you have certainly contributed greatly and covered a lot of the bases. I was reading Dr. Zingroni, you once did a study where to determine if one's body posture or physical activity would have an effect on having an out-of-body experience. That's true, isn't it?
Yes, this was actually a study that Carlos and I and Etzel Cardenia, who's a Thorson professor of hypnosis and psychology at Lund University, we all collaborated on this together. And part of our interest in activity when somebody goes out of the body came out of Carlos's actually his very first survey that he conducted way back in the end of the 70s at John F. Kennedy University when he was a master's student there. And one of his cases that we always like to talk about was of a young policewoman who had her out-of-body experience while she was in the process of apprehending a perpetrator. So going through the motions she'd been trained to do to catch a person and get them into the handcuffs and put them into the car. And we found that to be very interesting, as well as when he was working on his PhD at Edinburgh, he had a number of people who reported having their out-of-body experiences as they were walking along or riding a bicycle or training for a marathon. So while it seems like the majority of the experiences tend to happen when people are in a passive state, there still are an awful lot of folks that have out-of-body experiences that start when their body is definitely not at rest. So while we were interested in looking at how frequent it is that experiences happen when you're passive or falling to sleep or sitting and so on, and also how rare or not rare are these cases when the out-of-body experience actually happens while you're engaged in some kind of physical activity. And usually that physical activity is something that you're accustomed to doing, sort of your body can sort of be on autopilot. You're walking along, you're gardening, you're doing some kind of activity that you do frequently. And so that seems to be one of the elements.
Mm. You know, there still exists a tremendous amount of fear among the general public when we talk about some of these things. Anything out of the ordinary, people tend to feel the fear of the unknown. I know sometimes people say to us, "Oh, I would do anything if I could see my deceased loved one." And then, you know, then they're lucky enough to see an apparition, and they describe they're freaking out. You would think, you know, on the one hand, that they would like nothing more, but it's so overwhelming. Do you think it's important for people to start sharing their experiences with their friends and with their family and with their colleagues? Will that, you think, start to alleviate fear?
Yes, I will say so. I think in general people that are more open about their experiences, that can talk more widely about them, they integrate those experiences better in their lives. I find it very sad when you find people that have had very interesting experiences, but they have never mentioned it to anyone. Cases like that, when I was studying out-of-body experiences, one lady told me, you know, I have never mentioned this to anyone, not even to my husband for, I don't know, 30 years or more. So, you know, people are really afraid in general to talk about these things. I had a case of a student that in front of a class, I was teaching a parapsychology course to about 30 psychology students, and she said openly that she had an out-of-body experience, and you should have seen the faces of some of their classmates. Some of them kind of made a face and looked like her, like she was something weird and unacceptable. You know, I found out so surprising that the first things I did was to thank her and basically to proceed to say how typical her experience was, how many other people around the world have had it, and, you know, just to make the thing more normal. But the reality is that a lot of people don't like to share these things, and I think it's very good to share, starting with friends, with family, with other people. I think in general it's better for you. But it's also good for other people and also for the whole topic that we are talking about to normalize these things, to show that they happen all around. There is nothing better than to share them, to talk about experiences, so that people around become used to the idea that these are not as rare as we thought they were. They happen to a lot of people. They happen to my friends, to my family, and I think the more that goes around, the more acceptance there will be.
I appreciate that, and that was very well said. Well, unfortunately, we're at the end of our time. I want to tell our listeners, learn more about our guests tonight, Dr. Carlos Alvarado and Dr. Nancy Zingroni. They are extremely knowledgeable and well-respected in the field of parapsychology. Their website, where you can learn a bit, is thezire.org. You can learn more about their work at the Rhine Research Center by going to rhine.org. I thank you so much, Carlos and Nancy, for being with us, and I hope we get to talk again real soon.
Yes, I hope
so.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Now, we now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind as we visualize the healing light upon Francis Mastracco, Tim Donahue, Deb Morton, Tina Jocelyn, Barbara Russell, Vicky Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Theron, Eileen Lafada, Rita Springer, David Haith, Barbara Petillo, Glenna Irwin, Julie B., Stanley Mullen, John Borland, Flora Prisco, Marianne Pierschka, Tanya Cash, Andy O'Brien, Dorothy Mello, and Jeanette Davia. And now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.